Thursday.
Know, Alice, that you are just as pleased as I am that so many more women are entering our profession today. When I finished Harvard Law School in 1965, I was one of 25 women in a class of 550. And today I understand that at my law school, about half of the class is now composed of women. I'm delighted to see women moving more into the legal profession, into other professions, and into high-level policy-making positions in the government. As you may know, I've decided to take a leave of absence from my job at the Federal Trade Commission, and I put aside those law books for a while because I've been offered a position in the campaign, and I was very happy to accept it. In fact, I can't think of anything more important to me than working hard during these next weeks for people and principles in which I so strongly believe. I might just mention that in the past 2 years, President Ford has appointed far more women to high-level policy-making positions in the government than ever before in our history. And for the first time, the president has appointed two women who are serving at the cabinet level, Anne Armstrong, our ambassador to Great Britain, and Carla Hills, Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. President Ford has also said that he will be providing more and more opportunities for women during the coming 4 years. He has also directed the Attorney General to review the entire United States Code to determine the need for revising sex-based provisions that are not justified in law nor supported by wise policy. He's made it clear that he wants to eliminate all vestiges of discrimination within the federal government. And I would just add that my husband is certainly my strongest supporter because Bob has been very supportive in my career. He wants me to move forward in the areas that are of interest and concern to me, and he believes that all women and all citizens should receive the education they need and have the opportunity to develop their interests and to move into challenging positions where their talents will be utilized. Let me just say that I'm happy today to see so many women who are running for office to meet these women, and I certainly encourage them in their efforts. And again, I want to thank you, Alice, for this lovely memento of a very happy day with you in Ohio.
Very much, and Tommy, I certainly appreciate that fine welcome. You mentioned my wife, Mayor Miller. I want to introduce Elizabeth again. She's from North Carolina. She's our Southern strategy. Elizabeth, you want to stand up? I certainly want to thank the Rutherford High School Band and the Pride of the Gulf Coast. I understand you're playing Pensacola, Florida next, and I can't choose up sides because we're looking for votes everywhere, but I hope it's an outstanding game. Now, I know Tommy Thomas quite well. In fact, I didn't buy a used car from him. I bought a new car from Tommy Thomas, and it's still running. I think I'm one payment behind. It's a 1973, good shape. I won't need it for about 6 weeks. I may like to lease a car or rent a car. I'd be happy to drive it down here. But seriously, I've known Mr. Thomas or Tommy Thomas, and when he took over Governor Reagan's campaign and they started talking about the Panama Canal, I thought he was talking about Panama City. And that's why I was a little confused about that Panama Canal issue for some time. But Tommy's been inviting me to come here for many, many months, in fact, 2 or 3, 4 years, and I'm very proud to be here. We think a great deal of the South. We're going to carry a great deal of the South, and I don't want to make a lot of partisan comments. I understand there's some very fine independents and Democrats and Republicans in the audience. We first just want to thank you for being here and for extending a very warm welcome to us. And as soon as I finish this, we hope to have a chance to shake hands with part of the great number of people here. Now, we just left Ohio, which is another very fine state, another state where American working men and American working women are concerned about taxes. There's going to be an interview published tomorrow, an interview with Mr. Carter about tax reform. He finally made clear what he's talking about when he said he was going to raise the taxes of higher-income people with his tax reform program. The man said he had raised the taxes of people whose family incomes were above the median income and lower than for people below that level. And so far, so good. Until you find out what the median income is for family. This would be a working man and a working woman. The median income in the United States is between $14,000 and $15,000. Now, I'm not accustomed to thinking of families with incomes of $14,000 or $15,000 as higher income if the wife's working as well as the husband. But apparently Mr. Carter is. And I think, and President Ford thinks, that a family income of $14,000 to $15,000 is just barely enough to get by. But Mr. Carter thinks if you're earning that much, you should be prepared to do better by the government. In reality, we know that the contrary is true. The middle-income taxpayers in this country are very hard-pressed. They need tax cuts, not tax increases. President Ford has proposed tax cuts in two ways. First, he has tried to get the Congress to cut spending and taxes by an equal amount so as not to increase the federal deficit, which leads to inflation. Congress, of course, refused. They refused to follow the president's suggestion. But President Ford has another plan to cut taxes. He proposed an increase in the personal exemption for every taxpayer and his or her dependents, an increase from $750 to $1,000. I know he's proposed this because I introduced the legislation in the Senate. I offered the amendment. It was defeated by the liberals in the Senate. And now Mr. Carter comes along, billing himself as a friend of the average American, the so-called little people, as he describes those people, and promises to increase taxes on the very families who are bearing the heaviest burdens. As I see it, this is aimed directly at the well-being of middle-class Americans and will penalize the very people who are the hard-working heart and soul of this country. And I can only promise you, standing here in Panama City, you'll not get a program like that if you elect President Ford and Bob Dole. And let me add one or two other thoughts. I believe everyone in Florida and nearly everyone in America, and I would guess maybe to qualify that, nearly everyone in Florida, is concerned about our defense posture. We don't want to waste money in our defense system, but we don't want to be number two in the world either. I don't know where you finish if we have a conflict and we're number two. And Mr. Carter, without having any thoughts about where he's going to do it, is already suggesting we cut $5 to $7 billion out of the defense budget. Now, it's taken Mr. Ford, President Ford, a great deal of effort this year to persuade the Congress for the first time in 6 years to have some real growth in the defense budget. Not to help big defense contractors, not to waste money in the military, so that we can have peace in the world because we're strong. Not because we're weak, and that's what it's all about. I want peace, but I know that peace comes through strength and not weakness. And I ask you to look at the record. I ask you to look at the record. Now, someone said, how can you tell Senator Mondale apart from Senator Dole? And my answer is that he'll always be with George Meany. When you see George Meany, you'll see the other side. And I have a great deal of respect for some and the working men and women in this country, but I don't really believe the labor leaders ought to dictate the other party or any other party. But they have a pretty good grip on the liberal Democrats. They now control the Congress. Let's not give them the White House. We have to have some check and some balance in this country. And where does Mr. Carter stand? Well, he's talked about right-to-work laws, which I think are important in this state. They're important in my state. He says he's for repealing the right-to-work laws because George Meany's for repealing the right-to-work laws. And I think an American man or American woman ought to have a right to work without having to pay homage to some labor leader. And let me say finally, Florida is a very key state. I know there are a great many Democrats in the state of Florida. But I also know that there are a great many people in this state who have a conservative philosophy. Now, we can't be your geographic neighbor. We've got to yield that position to Mr. Carter. But we can be your philosophical neighbor. And that's what really counts. It's not where someone comes from. It's how they think and what they might do in America and for America and to America as the leader of the free world. And I ask you to do just one thing. If you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, or if you're an independent, take a look at our records. Take a look at my record, President Ford's record. Take a look at Mr. Carter's promises. Take a look at Senator Mondale's very liberal record. In fact, we've suggested we have our debate in the South, Mondale and myself, so the people in the South will have a chance to examine his very liberal voting record. But take a look at our records. Then make a judgment. Do you want a moderate to conservative philosophy, or do you want an all-out liberal philosophy to guide this country the next 4 years? We believe, whether you're Democrats or Republicans or independents, the choice is very clear. And you have that choice, and you have that responsibility. And we trust the American people. We don't say to the American people, trust us. We say we trust you to make the right judgment.
I know that you, Alice, are just as pleased as I am that so many more women are entering our profession today. When I finished Harvard Law School in 1965, I was one of 25 women in a class of 550. And today at my law school, I understand that almost half of each class are composed of women. I'm delighted to see women entering our profession and other professions in business and government in so many more numbers today. As you may know, I've decided to take a leave of absence from my position at the Federal Trade Commission. I've decided to put aside my law books for a while and to work full-time in the campaign. I was offered a position in the campaign, and I'm most happy to accept it, and I really can't think of anything more important than working hard during these next weeks for people and principles in which I so strongly believe. I might just mention that in the past 2 years, President Ford has appointed far more women to high-level policy-making positions in the government than ever before in our history, and he's the first president to appoint two women to serve at the cabinet level, Carla Hills as Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and Anne Armstrong as our ambassador to Great Britain. President Ford has also indicated that he intends to bring more and more qualified women into government positions during the coming 4 years. He has also asked the Attorney General to review the entire United States Code to determine the need to revise sex-based provisions which are not justified by law nor wise policy. He is determined to remove any vestiges of discrimination within the federal government. I would just add that my husband is certainly my strongest supporter. Bob has supported me in my career and encouraged me to move forward in areas which are of concern and of interest to me. He believes, as do I, that all women and all citizens should receive the education they need and have the opportunity to develop their interests and to move into challenging positions where their talents will be fully utilized. I'm happy this afternoon to have met so many women who are running for public office, and I want to encourage them in their efforts, and again, Alice, to thank you for your lovely comments and for the memento which you've given me, which will be a constant reminder in the future of a very happy afternoon with you here in Ohio.
Following is a speech in Orlando, a breakfast meeting on the 20th of September.
Thank you very much, and I certainly want to thank everyone who got up so early on a Monday morning to hear someone in politics, I won't say politician, but we appreciate that very much. We believe it's an important year for politics and for business and for those involved in chamber work. We believe you have a real choice in November, and I want to tell you a little about that in just a few minutes. I don't remember that 4:15 call, Lou. It might have been a recording. We had several we had several phones, and in each hotel we had a recording that I'm running for vice president. But because we learned very early that you had to be on someone's list to be considered, so I started putting together lists, and my name was always on top, and it always said outstanding, fantastic, knowledgeable, member of the budget committee. We dropped these around different hotels, but we discovered late Wednesday night that we had the present in the wrong hotel, and he probably hadn't seen any of my lists, so we didn't really think we had much of a chance. But the next morning, they were announcing that it was down to four, and I was on that list, and so we listened carefully, and one was Ann Armstrong. I knew she was in Scotland, couldn't possibly be back by noon for the joint appearance with the president, so I took her off the list, and the other was Ruckel's house. He was out in Tacoma, Washington. And besides, his name is too big for a button, so I think it probably, probably wouldn't be him. That left Senator Baker and Senator Dole, and I told my wife, Elizabeth, if they didn't go in alphabetical order, I had a chance, so I don't know what what happened. But shortly after that, of course, after this newscast, apparently the word was going around, and a lot of news people, media people, started gathering in the hall. Well, our room was right next to the suite occupied by former Governor John Connally, so I assumed that they were getting ready to tap him for the number two spot. But we couldn't really withstand trying to find out, so I told Elizabeth, I said, go over there and put your ear to the door and see what's going on out there in the hallway. That's legal in Kansas City. As long as you're listening out, you can see it's listening in that... But at any rate, when the president called, because of the proximity of the Connally room and thinking he might have had the wrong number, I accepted before I identified myself. So. And that's sort of a Chamber of Commerce free enterprise position, I think, Judge Kelly or Lou or whoever. And so we are very pleased to be here. I've been in Florida so many times making speeches. I used to say that it was Lincoln's favorite state. Now, of course, it wasn't here then, but... it's always a good place to come when it's snowing everywhere else in the country and make Lincoln Day speeches. So you find more Republicans making more Lincoln Day speeches in the state of Florida than any other state in the nation. And that's, of course, a tribute to our resourcefulness in your great state, so we appreciate that too very much. I saw President Ford on Saturday. We had a brief discussion about the campaign. I told him I thought there was some movement going on in this country, and particularly in the South. And if you watched NBC last night, they had a little special on candidates. There's a new poll out that shows us not 15 points behind, but 7 points behind. Just seems to me that, and you can't put your finger on it, but there is a great deal of movement, and I think the movement's away from Governor Carter. I guess I first ought to get clearance to make any partisan statements. Is that all right? If I say anything that's partisan, please excuse me. Someone asked how you could tell me apart from Mondale, and I say he'll always be with George Meany. I think Mondale did visit the South once. He thought he was in some other part of the country, but he came to Florida, in fact. We would like to have our debate in the South with Senator Mondale. We think you ought to see him in person, not just on television. We would like to have him explain his liberal voting record to Southern Democrats and Southern Republicans and Southern Independents, because we don't believe it'll wash in the South. Pretty hard to wash anywhere with an ADA rating that he has and a CIO rating that he has, almost perfect every year, one of the most liberal Democrats in America. And with that running mate and with the endorsement of the New York Liberal Party, Governor Carter still walking and running around the South telling Southerners, I'm a conservative. Don't worry about a thing. It doesn't mean a thing that George Meany gives me instructions from time to time and I'm endorsed by the Liberal Party and I have Walter Mondale on my ticket. That doesn't mean a thing. Just trust me. Well, I don't know. I want everybody to trust me, but that's going quite a ways, and I think we ought to take a hard look at what you're about could buy. And so in an effort to be nonpartisan, I'll just simply tell the truth and... you can draw your own conclusions. Now, Jimmy Carter has got a bear by the tail. I don't want the press to think I'm going to tell my bear story. I have a bear story that the press loves. The first 20 times. But he's got a bear by the tail. I think he ought to stop giving interviews and go back to his prepared text. But he gave an interview to a news service. If I say the news service, the other news service won't mention what I said. So I ought to say a news service. And he was asked a number of questions, and we're just barely starting on these questions, but I think it very seriously points up a fact that business people ought to know about and taxpayers ought to know about. And I was surprised last night watching an NBC program that John Chancellor was almost apologizing for Governor Carter, saying it was all a mistake. Well, it's not a mistake. He said it. He said he wanted to raise the taxes in effect of about half the American families in the country. That's not enough for the networks or any other apologist to get on and say, well, they left out three words. Those three words don't make a single bit of difference. And I can give you what he says. They ask, in dollar figures, what are you thinking of as higher? Well, I don't know. I would take the mean or median level of income, and anything above that would be higher, and anything below that would be lower. That's what he said. It's not what some commentator says or what somebody else says. That's what Carter said. And Bob Dole didn't say that, or Jerry Ford didn't say that, or Lou Fry didn't say that, or Judge Kelly didn't say that, or anybody in this audience didn't say that. All right. The trouble is, he's been running for president so long, he hasn't stopped to check to see what the median income is for an American family. I'm talking about the family, not one person, the family. If the husband works and the wife works, and the children work, the median income per family in America is between $12,000 and $15,000, actually about $14,000. Now, it's Carter who says he's going to raise the tax of those above the median. That's half the families in America. He doesn't say what he's going to do for those below. The assumption is he might lower the tax, but they'd be afraid to get above the median because they might have their taxes increased. So this is a man who talks about tax reform. He makes another statement that I think is even more frightening to businessmen. He's going to treat all income the same. All income is going to be treated the same. Out the window goes the capital gains tax. I just don't think he understands the tax system. Now, he's told so many different stories about the tax system. I suggest he go back to Plains, Georgia, and take a week off and have Senator Russell Long from Louisiana come down and explain the tax system to him. It's like somebody should explain the tax system to him. Now, he said when he was, whatever he was, in New York City, when he was coronated or accepted the nomination or whatever. He said that the national tax system is a disgrace. And I thought that was an interesting statement. In fact, I even turned up my television so I could hear it. Because we do have some problems with the tax system, the tax code. But I just suggest that it's one thing to talk about it, it's something else to do something about it. When you say something about it, you ought to know what you're talking about. Now, I think some in this room have heard of the investment tax credit. That's a tax incentive, which I support. Most members of Congress support. I'm not certain it's a loophole. He kept talking about all the loopholes for the rich, and everybody in this room, I assume, would be in the rich category. But Mr. Carter didn't mind taking $41,000 off his tax bill in 1975 because of an investment he made in some peanut machinery. I think he's thinking about expansion after the election. He'll have more time. So I just suggest, as honestly as I can, we ought to take a look at it. Because it just doesn't end with the $14,000 median income. That's just the tip of the iceberg. That's just one question and one answer in the interview. And I'm just as disturbed about the statement, which, again, is in his words, not mine, it's going to tax all income the same. All income's going to be taxed the same. Well, what does that mean? What are the implications of that proposal? Well, a businessman who sells his business would have to pay roughly twice the amount of tax he would now pay. A farmer who sold part of his land would find the tax rate on that sale doubled. A working family who sold their home in order to move into an apartment would pay $1,000 in taxes under current law, would pay about $2,000 if all income was treated the same. That's Mr. Carter's plan. At least that's what he said in the interview. A retired couple who sold the few shares of corporate stock they owned would find their taxes on that sale increased by about 100%. Now, I suggest we're going to hear a lot of explaining, and the Republicans are going to be charged with distorting the views, and some are going to say there might have been a mistake left. They left out three words, or middle income. That doesn't have a thing to do with his answer. So I just say, let's take a hard look at the candidates. Let's take a hard look at what they say, and let's take a hard look at their records. Now, I know where I am, and I know the general philosophy of this area, but I want to say that I think I vote like I talk. You can check on that, but I think you're going to find the substantial part of the time and the great, great majority of the time, Bob Dole is voting like he's talking. I happen to believe that there's a bigger issue that's staked than some one specific. It applies to Democrats and independents and Republicans. We're going to make a choice, whatever our party affiliation may be, on which direction we want to go after November 2nd, in fact, after next January. We want to go to the left, or do we want a moderate conservative leader as we have in President Ford? Now, I happen to believe the choice is very clear. I watched Governor Reagan last night and hope that some did in this room on talking about the Republican platform and the Democrat platform. And after that 30-minute program, I called Governor Reagan, had a very good visit with him. I thanked him for an outstanding performance. I thanked him for his efforts on behalf of the Ford Dole ticket. But I thanked him for his efforts on behalf of Americans generally, Democrats and Republicans or independents. This is not totally a partisan matter we're engaged in. If it were, not a single Republican would be elected in the state of Florida, except in isolated cases. And I happen to believe we're talking about a philosophy. We can't be your geographical neighbor. We don't come from Georgia. But we can be your philosophical neighbors. We believe that our voting records and our attitudes and our philosophy is much nearer the great majority of Floridians, Democrats, Republicans, and independents, certainly than Governor Carter's and Senator Mondale's. And that's not a partisan statement. All you have to do is check the record. I think some Floridians have an interest in right-to-work laws. That's Section 14B. Governor Carter has had at least three positions on that, but his latest is that he would sign it if 14B is repealed. He said the same about common situs picketing. Now, you don't have any doubts about it being passed by the Congress, and the only thing that's kept those two things from happening has been President Ford. It just seems to me that if you're a Democrat in this audience, and I hope there are a great number of you, or if you're an independent, if you're a Republican, and a businessman, you take a hard look at it. Now, organized labor leaders, in effect, control the Congress now. You want to give them the White House? Then what do you have left? You've got Leonard Woodcock and Jerry Wirth and George Meany and other labor leaders getting together to decide what they're going to have done in the Congress. And I'm not kidding, and I'm not joking, and I'm not stretching the truth. They're going to call the shots. And I just think we ought to take a hard look at it. I've told a business group similar to this in Lexington that we need the American businessman to look at the word enterprise as well as the word free in the next few weeks. We need some help. Doesn't do any good to write me after the election and say, why didn't you work harder if you haven't done anything yourself? And I say that to my Democrat and Republican independent friends. We need help. Not for the sake of Bob Dole and Jerry Ford. I'll still be in the Senate, whatever happens. And you'll still be in business. Maybe different. More regulation, more taxes, more labor interference, more dictates from Washington, more spending, less defense. So we all have a stake in this. It's not just a couple of candidates running around the country keeping the press awake half the night. That's what they tell me. I think another area that ought to concern every American, every mother, every father, every grandmother, grandfather, is a strong national defense. Now, Mr. Carter says this. It's not my statement, it's his. He says, I want to cut defense spending by $5 to $7 billion. Now, maybe he's got a plan that's perfect. It'll cut out fat, waste, and make us even stronger. But we still have inflation, so if you add that to what he proposes to cut, he's really talking about probably $14 or $15 billion. Now, I just happen to have a gut feeling that most Americans want to be number one for the sake of peace. I'm talking about the sake of peace. We don't have any aggressive actions in mind. But we can't deal with the Russians. We can't deal with anyone else, whether it's the Middle East or wherever. Again, I'm talking about peaceful dealing, unless we have strength. I don't want to be number two in the world. I want to be number one for the sake of peace. And then we have Mr. Carter. And I went to Seattle, Washington, after Mr. Carter had been there talking to the Americans.